Okay, so mitzvah number 600, according to the canon of the Sefer HaChinuch and the Rambam. So this mitzvah is the mitzvah to save somebody whose life is being threatened. We call this the mitzvah, or the concept of rodef. Rodef means a pursuer. And if somebody is being pursued by another who's trying to kill him, you have the right, and you have the mitzvah, to save the person's life by somehow stopping the other. So if it means killing the pursuer, you're supposed to do it. If you can stop him in other ways, you should do it that way. But your job is to save the one being pursued from this murderer. That's your job. The way this is brought out in the Torah, we'll see, is in two separate sections, and neither of them are actually explicit about it, but we'll show how we understand it. But you must go ahead and kill the rodef, the pursuer, if somebody is being pursued and threatened to be killed. So we have two sources for this. So the first source we'll start out with is the one that we're up to now. Mitzvah number 600 is quoted over here. And the source is not a likely source. It's not one that you would recognize as a source without the Medrash explaining it. So the Torah says, "Ki natsu anashim yachdav." If two men are fighting, ish ve'achiv, you know, a man and his brother, a man and another, v'karva eshes echad, and the wife of one of the men comes close, lahatzilas isha miyamakev, to save her husband from the one assaulting him. V'shalcha yadav v'chzikamushav, she stretches out her hand and she grabs the private area of the assaulter. V'katzosa es kapa. So the literal translation is you should cut off her hands. Lo sachu l'sinecha, don't cover your eyes, don't have mercy upon her. So just if you take this literally, two men fighting, a wife comes to save her husband, she grabs the man in his private area, you cut off her hand, that's the literal translation, and have no mercy. That's the Torah's literal translation. The literal translation is not the simple understanding over here, because Rashi tells us, and this is based on the Gemara, that what it means here is that you have to pay a payment. It doesn't mean cut off her hand. Cut off her hand is a metaphor for making her pay the cost of what she did. And this is actually a source in Torah for the payment called boshes. Boshes means if you embarrass somebody, you have to pay. When one person injures another, hurts another, there's five possible payments in halacha, which I think we discussed many years back. But the five payments in halacha, just I guess to go through that quickly, one payment is called nezek, that's the actual damage which occurred, and that's calculated by the value of a person on the slave market. When you used to have slaves, a person had actual price. And if you were to injure them, their slave value went down. So the one assaulting the other has to pay that difference in price. That's called nezek.
Nezek. The nun.
Yeah, the nun. Nezek. The next one would be tsar. You have to pay for the pain which you caused. So if the wound you inflicted caused pain to the person, you have to pay for their pain. There is sheves, which means if the person had to lose out time at work because of the injury to pay for their time off of work. Ripui, you have to pay the doctor's bills. That's ripui. And then boshes is for embarrassment. If the assault caused embarrassment to the person, to pay for their embarrassment.
It's all monetary.
All monetary, yeah. Embarrassment, boshes.
Boshes,
embarrassment. So this is looked at as a source, Rashi explains, for boshes. She grabbed him in an embarrassing way, so you make her pay for that embarrassment. That's the way Rashi understands this verse and this Torah. This is the way the Gemara looks at it this way. This is one way the Gemara views this psukim in the Torah. However, there's another approach to this, which is the approach of the Sifri, one of the Midrashim. And the Medrash says that you can learn this literally. And literally it means when the lady goes to assault this other man to save her husband, she's threatening this man's life. She's grabbing him in order to go for the kill. And therefore, you cut off her hand literally because she's actually trying to murder this fellow. That's the way that the Medrash understands these psukim. Very different than the way that Rashi quotes from the Gemara. Where Rashi says it's talking about embarrassment and paying a monetary value for embarrassment. The Medrash says that she is threatening his life, and therefore he cut off her hand to stop that threat, to neutralize the problem. That's what you have to do. So based on that, the Medrash says, well, if cutting off her hand is sufficient, cut off her hand. If that won't stop her, you've got to kill her, because you can't have another person threaten another person's life. And if you do, you have to kill them and have no mercy. So that's the source that the Medrash quotes from this pasuk. So the actual mitzvah, the actual prohibition we're discussing is lo sacho seinecha, you shall have no mercy upon the pursuer, upon the rodef, the one threatening another person's life. So that's one source. if you don't save the nirdaf, you don't save the victim, the threatened, you violated this commandment in the Torah. You have a mitzvah to save the one being threatened. Additionally, if you didn't save the one being threatened, you violate something else as well. There's another mitzvah called Lo Sam Lo Dam Re'echa. You can't stand by upon your brother's blood. So if you see another Jew being threatened, you have a mitzvah to go and take action. So you have two mitzvahs involved here, not to have mercy upon the rodef, upon the pursuer, and not to stand by as your Jewish brother or sister is being threatened. And there's two violations involved if you just stand back and watch. Meaning, granted, you could do something. Obviously, if you could do something yourself, you have to do something. That's one source. There's a second source. This is actually earlier on in Parshas Kisei.
The first source was from Devarim?
Yeah, Devarim, chapter 25, Perek Chafei. And it's all in Kiseitse. We've been in Kiseitse a long time. All in Kiseitse. So back in Kiseitse, a few chapters earlier, this is in Perchav Beis, chapter 22, we have another place where we have a source for the concept of saving somebody being threatened. And this is a very different scenario. Here it's talking about a scenario of rape. And we're the Torah says, "In basada yimsa ish es hanara hamarasa." If a man finds a manomarasa means she is betrothed, the betrothed lady in the field. So she's already done half of the marriage process, the kiddushin. Behechzik ba ish v'shachav ima, and the man grabs her and rapes her. It says that this man is liable to the death penalty. I mean, she's a married woman, and he raped her, so he's committed an act of adultery. And no, she's exempt because she was raped. It wasn't her fault. But the man is chayv misa. He's liable to capital punishment for such an act. And then it says, don't do anything to the girl. She didn't do anything that deserves death. Because as a man rises up and tries to kill his fellow, this is similar. Meaning we're comparing a case of rape to a case of murder. You have a helpless victim. Being victimized, and just like in a case of murder, you can't blame the victim for being murdered. You don't blame the girl for being raped. That's the simple translation here. Kivasada mitzah, she's found in the field. Tzakanara, she called out. Mein mashila, nobody saved her. So Torah says that she was victimized. She called out. Nobody came to her to save her, and unfortunately, she had to suffer through this experience. So the Gemara says, well, it says that she called out. Nobody saved her. That implies that if somebody was around to save her, he's obligated to save her. And to the extent that the Torah compares it to a murder, the previous pasuk said that as a person rises up to murder a fellow, so too is this case. I mean, we compare rape to murder, at least in this aspect. And just like when it comes to a murder, we have the mitzvah to save the victim by killing the pursuer, so too in this case of a rape. And we'll talk about specifically what we're referring to here, but in this case of a rape as well, you should save her. A moshil, no one's around to save her. That implies you should save her if you could. And the Gemara tells us those two things are connected. Both cases, the case of rape and the case of murder, are connected in this way. It's important to note that when we talk about a case of rape here, we mean specifically a case where it would be an act of arayos, an act of an illicit relationship. I mean, had she been, let's say, a single woman, as tragic as it is, that's not as severe as being a married woman. So therefore, the prerogative to kill the man who's raping her is only in a case where it's actually considered arayas, deemed arayas on a Torah level. So that's important to note.
Arayas on a Torah level?
Yeah.
She's married.
Not just Isha Ish.
Well, Ish is a rise, but yeah, it goes beyond that. So incest as well would be the same idea.
Okay, right. So yeah. But when we say a rise, we usually think of the relationships that we read about Yom Kippur afternoon.
Yeah, right.
So when we say a rise in general, does it include the case of Ish?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so, yeah. Because it's any act which would be liable to death or to kares, which are Eshdish is one of those, and all those listed in the Yom Kippur Lane. Those are all part of this discussion. If she was a single girl who's not a Rayos, so then it would obviously be terrible and tragic, but you would not have the right to kill the rapist as he goes after her.
So you have to ask if she's married?
Well, that's a good question.
True.
You know?
That's true.
I mean, if you know who she is, then you know. You know, if you don't know, that's a good question. I'm not sure what you do in that case.
Save her.
Right.
Know.
Yeah, I don't know what you do in that case. That's a good question. I don't know. So we have another place where we're allowed to kill a pursuer, and that's a case of somebody who's going to rape someone who would be a rayos. The other case where you can kill a pursuer. Yeah.
Well, if she's married, then she might want to say, hey, I'm married, so the guy will be killed.
Right. So she might want to make that known.
She might want to make that known.
Right, that's true. Yeah, you know, you have to know practically how you determine in this case, but that's the halacha. And then the third related case where you could kill the pursuer would be if a man's running after another man to sodomize him. That would be similar to a case of a rayos, but a case of a homosexuality. So he's going to sodomize the man, you could kill the pursuer. That's because that's also considered an act of a rayos. That in the Torah is considered similar to a rayos, but that's in severity. Yeah.
I'm sorry, if it hasn't happened yet, how can you say that's what he was going to do?
How do you know that's what he's going to do? I mean, I guess the case would be that's clear, that's what's about to happen, you know?
He did it before.
yeah, you know, you, obviously if you kill him and you're not sure what he's about to do, then you become a murderer. But you have to, obviously if the context makes it clear what the goal is, whether he's saying it, whether he's about to start the act, you know, at that point is when you can kill. Again, if you could stop him in another way, then you should. But the only way to stop him is by killing him, then you can kill him. So if you can shoot the guy in the foot, you know, if you can chop off his hand, if you can scream out for the cops, whatever it is, you should do that first. But if there's no other option, you have the right in the mitzvah to kill in such a case. So we really have three cases where you can kill the pursuer. Three different cases. As an aside, it's interesting. There are a few other cases that the Mishnah discusses that you could kill a person doing a sin. I mean, any other sin in the Torah, you can't kill. If a guy's going to violate Shabbos, you can't kill him. If someone's going to eat pig, you can't kill them. If someone's going to eat chametz and piss, you can't kill them. That's up to the Beis Din to deal with. That's not your job. The Beis Din will then have to go through the procedure. You know, you get your due process, and then the Beis Din will decide what to do. But an onlooker can't kill somebody doing other averos besides these three. However, there are a few other exceptions in the Mishnah, and these are actually interesting cases that they call Kanayan Pogimbo, that those who are zealous can step up and take law into their own hands. The famous example of this is Pinchas in the Torah. You know, Pinchas saw the prince of Shevet Shimon going into his tent with the Midianite princess, and he got up and he killed them, and that was praised. So that's one case. It's called Abo El Ramis. Someone's going to be intimately with a non-Jewish lady, Kanayim Pogimbo. What that means is very specific, though. If you were to go ask the rabbi, can I kill someone in this case? He would tell you, no, you're not allowed to. But it means if you feel the rage of Hashem, how dare somebody do such an act publicly and violate Hashem's name to turn terrible to Hashem, you get up and kill the person, it's praised after the fact. It's a very interesting scenario. So if you were to ask the rabbi, is it right? The answer is no, you're not allowed to.
Right.
If you were to go ahead and do it, we say, wow, what a beautiful act. It's
But that was only Pinchas. They say, do not try this at home.
Uh-huh. Right.
Pinchas was the only one who could do
that. Unless you have the emotions of Pinchas. If you have those emotions,
the emotions
for the sake of
it. That's justifies it.
Yeah, it's for the sake of... Because the idea is that your rage on Hashem's behalf is so great, you can't hold yourself back.
Mm.
The moment you hesitate and say, Rabbi, can I do it? Then you hesitated. That means that your rage isn't like Pinchas anymore. So very few of us would have that same emotions to fight on Hashem's behalf. You know, it has to be totally for the sake of heaven that you're doing this, because you can't stand seeing such a terrible avera occur in front of your face.
If you do this, do you then have to stand before Beis Din and justify that it was allowed because you were doing it for Hashem?
That's a good question. I mean, as long as the act being done warranted this, I think at that point, now that you did it, they're not going to prosecute you. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you can't prove your feelings at the time. But as long as you can prove the act was one that warrants this behavior.
But so what's to keep somebody from being a wanton murderer and saying, I was motivated for Hashem, and then he gets off?
It's a good point, but it's only in these specific cases. So it has to be that you see two people in this act and doing it. So you're right.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you can't prove what your intent was. I agree. But when this is the act occurring in front of your face, at that point, Beis Din says, you know, that you're off the hook. There's two other cases as well where everyone can do this. Again, not, if you ask the question, the rabbi tells you don't do it, but if you were to do it, it's considered praiseworthy. The other case is Gonav HaKasva. If someone is stealing vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, you see someone going into the Beis HaMikdash and starting to carry out like the menorah or something, right?
So like the Romans?
So like the Romans did, yeah. So that's a case of Kanai and Pogimbo. Somebody who's a Kanai, if you're zealous on behalf of Hashem, and your emotions grab you, I have to go and take action, then it's considered a praiseworthy act to kill the person in the middle of the action. And the third case is called Hamakalal Bekosim, if somebody starts to curse Hashem with the name of idolatry, with the name of another god. So a blasphemer using the name of idolatry to curse Hashem. That person, in that act, again, if your rage within is so powerful, there's a passion, how dare someone do this, and you get up and kill that person, that's considered okay.
The one stealing from the vessels from the Mekdash is called what? Kanai?
Hagonev, stealing, es hakasva. Kasva is a term for these vessels.
Hagonev?
Es hakasva.
Es hakasva.
Kasva. So those are other exceptions where you could kill somebody in the act of an avera. That's only, like I said, not. It's not that you go to the rabbi and he paskins it's okay. It's that the rage within you is just so powerful, you can't hold back, and you do it. We say, wow, that's like Pinchas, standing up for Hashem's honor, that's very praiseworthy.
So then, if somebody curses Hashem but doesn't invoke the name of idolatry, you're not allowed to.
Right, yeah. You can send him to Beis Din, but you can't, okay. You can't step in, yeah. Okay. Obviously, these are very severe acts. You know, these are considered very big insults to Hashem. So those are the rules. As we said, you can save them by other means, you should. One interesting thing about these cases, typically to execute somebody in a Beis Din, there has to be a due process, as we've said. One of the main things involved is has to be witnesses, has to be warning. So in this case, I mean, you are the witness, there's no witnesses because you're not going to a Beis Din. You are supposed to warn the guy, if possible. He doesn't need to accept the warning. Usually, to kill someone in Beis Din is very difficult because you have to warn the person, if you go ahead and do this act, you're liable to death in Beis Din. He has to say okay and then do the act. He has to accept the warning. In this case, he doesn't need to accept the warning. You just say, stop running after that guy, I'm going to kill you, you know, and he keeps on going, you can kill him. If you can't even do that, let's say just things are moving so fast, you have no time to warn, we can kill him anyways. The warning is considered appropriate to do. He doesn't need to accept it, and if you can't warn, just go ahead and kill, you know, because you have to save the person. So that's interesting about a rodif. One interesting application of this, I mean, there's several, but one application of this also is a case of abortion. I mean, I don't want to get into abortion in a bigger topic, but if the baby is threatening the mother's life, the Torah would allow abortion based on this rule, because the baby is the pursuer now. It's not his fault. But the baby is being rodef, the fetus. Yes, the fetus is being rodef. The fetus is threatening the mother's life. So that's one case, clearly, in halacha, where abortion would be allowed. Again, I'm not getting into the bigger topic, but yeah.
Which is the reason that many Catholic or Christian women go to Jewish doctors, because they'll know the Jewish doctor will save the woman and not the baby, not the fetus.
Interesting.
The
baby. Right. Yeah. Right. Interesting.
I believe I heard that even if a Jewish woman is in this situation, she should go to a Jewish
absolutely
physician and not rely on a non-Jew
because they may save the baby.
Right.
Because the mitzvah is not on the non-Jew.
Right, it's a mitzvah. It'd be a mitzvah for the doctor to perform this. Right, that's a good point. So, again, abortion obviously is a much larger topic, but in this specific case where the baby is threatening the mother's life, that's clearly a place where halacha allows an abortion to occur.
That's why we can't, as Jews, ever say we're completely against abortion.
Right.
You know, because we can't work for outlaw on abortion.
Right, correct. Right. Halacha does allow it in certain extenuating circumstances.
And requires it.
Right. Yeah, in this case we require it. Correct. Right. Yeah, correct. So this mitzvah is a mitzvah, obviously, of saving a life. That's the main part of this mitzvah. We know if you save a Jewish life, it's like you save the entire world, the famous statement of Chazal. And the reason for the mitzvah is self-explanatory, for the most part. We understand, you know, if you have a victim being pursued by another, we understand what it takes to save that victim. The world should be a safe place to live in. We should stand up for those who are pursued and victimized, and that's certainly a Jewish value. There's a pasuk in Koheles. It says, Elokim yavakish es nirdaf, which we'll talk about more later, but the way the Sefer HaChinuch understands that pasuk is that somebody who is victimized seeks out God. I mean, somebody is going through a situation like this, and someone's pursuing them. In their heart, what are they doing? They're praying to Hashem, save me from this terrible act. And Hashem, therefore, stands up on that person's behalf, and he commands us all to step in and save that victim. So the pasuk, Elokim yavakish es nirdaf, according to Sefer HaChinuch, is that the nirdaf, the one being pursued, the victim, has this special prayer to Hashem to save them, and therefore Hashem commands us to help out and get involved in such an act. It's interesting, because if we were to analyze this for a second, now, we're probably all aware of the halacha, that if someone comes to you and says, kill this person or I'm going to kill you, you're not allowed to kill the other person. right? Yahar lo yavor. One of the averos, one of the three cardinal sins you must give your life for is murder. And if someone came to me with a gun and said, "You shoot him, or I'll shoot you," I have to die for that. I can't murder someone else to save my own life. This is based on the concept and the rationale the Gemara gives. It says, "Michazes tedama didach sumaktefe." Who says your blood is redder than his? Right? I mean, you don't know who's more valuable in Hashem's eyes. How can you choose one life over another? And that's the logic we use. So if the guy says, "You kill him or I'll kill you," who am I to say who should die? It's not my decision, and therefore I can't kill someone else on my behalf. I have to remain passive, and if I die, then that's my mitzvah. In this case, we are choosing one life over another. We might understand why, but we are choosing the life of the victim over the pursuer. The Torah is giving you the right, choose this person's blood is better than that one's blood, as it were. You know, choose this person over that person, because you're killing the pursuer to save the pursued. So why is that? So we would say, well, logically, that if one is so, you know, low to do such an act, then maybe their blood isn't as red as the other one's blood. You know, we would say this person deserves it.
So there's a Israeli military, the IDF has this thing where if there's a terrorist attack and the terrorist is wounded worse than the victim, the doctors save the terrorist first.
Really? Interesting. Okay.
And to me, that's... All right, anyway, I won't go on with this. It's me, okay. But, so where does that come in?
I don't know. I mean, halachically, I don't see it.
It's hyper-moral.
But...
hyper-morality.
But the Israelis are not always making decisions based on the Gedolim.
Right.
You know, they're making their own. I don't know,
yeah.
But...
and they're proud of it.
Like, yeah, I'm sure they're proud of it. You know, it fits a lot of what they do. But halachically, I don't necessarily see that as the right way to go. But you know, I don't know who makes those decisions in the IDF. You know, these moral ethical decisions. I'm not sure who's the one on top of it for the IDF. I'm not sure.
Could be the civilian leader.
It could be. I'm not sure. So we understand this concept that the one who is pursuing the other, the perpetrator, obviously he's guilty. I mean, he's doing a terrible act and maybe he deserves to die, but it's interesting to understand, because the you know, typically we don't choose one life over another. So there's another push to this as well, which the way the Mishnah describes this mitzvah, it says matzilon osam benafsham, you save them with their life. So who are we saving with whose life? So we would understand that you're saving the victim through the life of the pursuer. That's what we would think. But different commentaries say, no, you're saving the pursuer by taking his life. I mean, this person's about to do an act which is so terrible, so vicious, so destructive. They have essentially ended their life spiritually, certainly, and even in this world, the way they're going to be treated afterwards. And in some ways, it's better to be dead than to commit this terrible act. So you see a person about to do one of the worst sins possible, and if they go ahead and do it, they've destroyed themselves. And the neshama's pain and destruction done to the neshama is so severe, it's better they die without doing the act for themselves rather than do the act and remain alive. That's part of the perspective over here. So it's not just that I'm choosing the life of the victim over the pursuer, I'm actually helping the pursuer, because it's better to be dead than to do such a terrible avera. That has to be the outlook. It's hard to understand sometimes. But that's how we understand a lot of these ideas. Any of these mitzvahs we're supposed to give our lives for. So the notion of those mitzvahs also is it's better to be dead than do such a terrible sin. Now we're all aware of, you know, the big three, we call them cardinal sins, as they say, murder, idolatry, and gilui arayos, and sexual immorality. And those three do require us to give our lives to avoid those averos. And many, many commentaries explain it's because that doing that sin is so terrible, it's better to be dead than to have that on the record, as it were, you know, to have the impact of that sin. So here, this man is pursuing the other. It's better for him to be dead than to have perpetrated this terrible avera. So it teaches us to understand the spiritual impact of these actions. It's not just that we have a victim here whose life is going to be either taken or irreversibly changed afterwards based on the act, but there's a spiritual impact which is here, which is as severe, even more severe than death. And therefore, we have to keep that into account. As we look at the scene, you take that into account as well. So you're saving the victim from being victimized, but you're also saving the criminal from the terrible act he's doing. You're saving both. This mitzvah teaches responsibility towards others. We are responsible to stand up. We can't just sit back and say, you know, it's not me, what can I do? And the Torah says, don't have any mercy. It's your job to do whatever you can to save the victim in such a case. Lo Sama Damri Echa tells you can't stand by as your when your friend's blood is threatened. And Lo Sachos Enecha means you can't have any mercy upon a pursuer. After the fact, then he has to go to Beis Din for due process. But before the fact, when the act is about to take place, there's no mercy. You do whatever you can. If it takes chopping off a hand, if it takes killing, you have to do whatever it takes to save that person. This mitzvah shows us how Hashem views what we call the nirdaf, the one being pursued. I want to go back for a minute to that verse we quoted from Koheles. It says in Koheles, let's give you the source. This is chapter 3 of Koheles, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. It says, Mashahaya kvarhu, whatever it was, was. Vashir lihiyos kvarhaya, and that which will be also was. I mean, nothing new under the sun, as they say. Velokim yavakesh es nirdaf. And it says that, and the literal translation would be that Hashem seeks out those who are pursued. So we mentioned the Sefer Chinuch reverses it and says those who are pursued seek Hashem, which is also true. You know, if you are victimized, you do seek out God. But the simple reading of the verse is that Hashem, He seeks out those who are pursued. Hashem feels especially responsible, or especially close to those who are victimized. It's an important lesson for us, that Hashem will do justice. Now, Hashem will be sure that victims are taken care of. We have to learn that God is seeking out those who are victimized. It's not just Hashem says, okay, you know, what was. But if somebody is, God forbid, victimized in these terrible ways, and anyway, in general, if you're a nirdaf, you're someone who's pursued, then Hashem stands up for you. The Gemara says in the Maseches Baba Kama, it says that a person should always be minha nirdafim. It's better to be of those who are pursued than be the pursuer. And it's kind of like we said before, being the pursuer shows the terrible, the terrible mitos that you have. Now, you are aggressive towards others, you're victimizing others. It's better to be the victim than to be the criminal, even though no one wants to be victimized. And the source for this, the Gemara says, is that when it comes to sacrifice, the karbanos, so we're very limited in which birds we can bring. The only birds that offer karbanos are the tor and the yonah. We're talking about, you know, doves and pigeons, basically. And the Gemara says that doves and pigeons are the most pursued of all birds. So I'm not sure where that, exactly why and how. It could be because they were useful for people, you know, whether they had carrier pigeons, whether for meat. Whether, I don't know what people did with them, but they're the most pursued of all birds, the Gemara says.
Pursued by people, or?
Unclear to me. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Or pursued by other birds or animals.
Yeah. Other animals, yeah.
It could be. I'm not sure. But it says that's why they were chosen to be the only animal, the only birds valid for karbanos, because they're pursued. Because Hashem feels a special closeness to those who are pursued. And it's true, it's better not to be the aggressor. You're allowed to act in self-defense. I don't want to get involved in that discussion. Self-defense is encouraged. But to be on the offensive, to be an aggressor versus being the one being pursued, you don't want to have that meat of being an aggressor. Becoming a murderous person, becoming a person who goes on the offensive. That's not considered a Jewish trait. Jews are merciful, Jews are humble, and that's what we go for. You know, I like, there's a famous quote from Golda Meir, which I like to quote, I've quoted before. She says that we could forgive the Arabs for killing our children, but not for making our children into killers. You know, that's a...
Forcing us to kill their children.
Maybe, I don't think that's whatever it is. Making your children to killers is the point she made. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, being killed, unfortunately, people get killed. But to change around the Jewish trait of mercy and to make, you know, our Jewish children into murderers, because by force, but we have to. You have to fight a war. You have to become a soldier. Mm-hmm. But for that, we can't forgive them. That's what Golda Meir said. You know.
And also this, I don't know who said it, but if you're kind to the cruel, you will be eventually be cruel to the kind.
Okay, yeah. I guess it's a similar, similar idea. Yeah. Right. So Hashem looks for humility, looks for self-control, looks for us to have that sense of mercy and compassion. And if you become a rodef, you become the pursuer, then you've gone against what you stand for as a Jew. if you are pursued, it's unfortunate, but better be the pursued that Hashem loves and cares for than the pursuer. The Maral says that being a rodeth, being the pursuer, indicates an extreme loss of control in a person. It's not a trait for a Jew, because it means that now you are now trying to be aggressive. You're trying to go and put yourself over others. That's not a Jewish trait. That's Maral says. So that's the idea of a rodeth. So practically, we hope it doesn't come up. It could. We hope it doesn't. But to understand the importance of standing up for another, to understand the impact of a terrible avera upon a person, and to understand our responsibility towards other Jews who are victimized, it's an important part of this mitzvah. So even if this doesn't come up in particular, but to know that we have to be there for those who are victimized, God forbid, to be there for those who are pursued, that's definitely the ruach. You know, that's definitely the message of this mitzvah, if not the actual practical halacha. So this one allows only in a certain few situations to kill the pursuer, but the idea that we should always feel close and care for a victim, that's something which is certainly a Jewish trait and important perspective to have.
One thing I was thinking of that this comes in every